She said, get out the chat room and clean my bed. Stretch, feeling fine, so fresh.
The Glad Girl Group coming at you with a throwback jam. That was Glad Force Flex Drawstring Trash Bags featuring Pine Sol Original Scent. And that's better than all good. It's all Glad.
Cheers to a great day and this ice-cold Corona.
You know what would make this day even better? My grandma's carne asada.
Or your grandma here with us, making carne asada.
She does love a cold Corona.
Throw in some dancing.
Oh, we can watch the game.
I'll drink to that.
So a backyard concert with football, food, dancing, and Corona?
And your grandma.
Or we could keep it simple.
Simple is good. Want a Corona?
Thanks. Salud to the perfect day.
Corona, la vida más fina. Get your Corona at ordercorona.com. Relax responsibly. Corona Extra Beer, imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
You're listening to This Week in Fantasy Baseball.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. I'm Lee Keller, joined by John Kuh. In this episode, we'll recap the hitter and pitcher performances from this past week, talk about the latest news around baseball, and give you all some streamer recommendations for next week, of course. But before we get into all of the good stuff, John, how's your week been going?
Honestly, my week's been completely dominated by basketball since the NBA playoffs are going on, but still been able to sneak in a little bit of baseball here and there. The Twins are still doing well, and my home league is insane because Yoan Duran got dropped 2 days ago, and then today Michael Harris the second got dropped, so I spent a lot of fab on O'Neal Cruz, but I didn't have enough fab to get Duran, and I'm not sure if I'm going to have enough fab to get Michael Harris, but we are going to try.
Yeah, you might as well put your best foot forward for that, because those guys are pretty good, so you would definitely want to pick them up. Basketball has been going crazy. Go Knicks. I'm hoping they do well. I'm not super into basketball, but I do follow the Knicks a little bit, so it's nice to see them doing well. Hopefully they can beat the Pacers. But for me, baseball's just been everything, really. I've been doing all things baseball, budgeting 9 leagues, trying to figure everything out, keeping everything going. It's been a grind. The home league I'm in is going pretty well. I think I'm in 5th out of 10, and we're like 2 points out of 1st. In our pitcherless league, that's also on Yahoo, I'm doing well. I think I'm in 3rd. I'm doing pretty well all across the board. There's certain leagues where I have a ton of injuries, like in TGFBI and a few other leagues, but I'm doing well in my best ball double up on NFBC. That's looking pretty good. I believe I'm over the threshold to profit, so hopefully that sticks around. And yeah, just been doing baseball stuff all around. I'm very excited about the season. It's been a lot of fun. The Mets are fun to watch, even though we're not doing too great. It's just been fun overall. I've been having a lot of fun this baseball season. So I think that's very important when baseball season comes around to always just cherish it, because it feels like it goes by so fast, even though it's so long. And then when it's not here, you're like, man, I wish I could watch some baseball. So it's great to have it back. But the other sports are flourishing as well. Hockey playoffs is going on. Basketball playoffs are going on. So lots of exciting stuff happening. But baseball is still priority number one around here. So before we get into the rest of this podcast, just a reminder that you can follow our podcast on Twitter at ThisWeekPL, and you could send us your fantasy baseball questions to our email at ThisWeekPLPod at gmail.com. Lastly, make sure that you subscribe to or follow the podcast on whatever streaming platform that you listen to your podcasts on. We're on all of them, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever else you listen to your podcasts on. So make sure that you follow us. And please, if you have the time, leave a 5-star review if you enjoy listening to the show. It would help us out greatly. Now, moving on to the news from this past week, we start with a trade. Luis Arraez was traded from the Marlins to the Padres for 4 prospects, headlined by Dylan Head. Pretty interesting, the Padres acquired yet another middle infielder. I feel like their whole team is already comprised of shortstops or former shortstops, and now all of a sudden they acquire a second baseman slash shortstop. So I don't know what they're really doing. I know Arraez plays a bit of first, but so does Jake Cronenworth, and he was also a second baseman. It doesn't make too much sense, but hey, the Padres added a very good hitter to their lineup. Next, we have Trey Turner of the Phillies, who was placed on the 10-day IL on Saturday, May 4th, with a left hamstring strain. He's expected to miss 6-plus weeks, so that's a pretty big blow for fantasy managers out there. Hopefully, you'll find a replacement for him. Joe Musgrove of the Padres was placed on the 15-day IL on Sunday, May 5th, with right elbow inflammation. It's quite a shame because we literally talked last podcast about Musgrove having his best start of the season, and then right after that, 4 days later, gets put on the IL with elbow inflammation. Never a good sign, and you hate to see that. Right when someone's starting to cook, they get cooked. So, not great for Musgrove. Christian Encarnacion Strand of the Reds was placed on the 10-day IL with a fractured hand. Wilson Contreras of the Cardinals was placed on the 10-day IL on Wednesday, May 8th, with a left forearm fracture. He underwent surgery and is expected to be out for 10 weeks, which is right around the All-Star break. It was brutal. John, I don't know if you saw this on Twitter or any video of it, but the Mets were playing the Cardinals and JD Martinez was in the box, and he generally stands deeper in the box. His right foot is usually all the way on the line at the back of the batter's box. And there was a report that the Cardinals had Wilson Contreras moving up behind the plate so that when sinkers come in, he could frame them better or kind of rob extra strikes. So he's pushed up a little bit. JD Martinez is back a little bit. He took a swing and his full bat path hit into Contreras' arm and broke it. Like, I can't even imagine. He was writhing in pain. So, man, that is just brutal. Did you see it?
Yeah, I saw it after the fact. It was kind of nuts because there were some pictures showing, like, where Contreras, like, used to, you know, line up basically when he was playing for the Cubs. And it's like a full, like, 6 inches to a foot.
Yeah.
Of, like, difference there. And then, of course, yeah, you couple that with JD Martinez, who, like you said, is a little bit further back in the batter's box. Just a perfect storm of situations. You kind of feel like this is the Cardinals' fault, you know, messing with a guy who, I'm not saying Contreras was ever, like, an elite defensive catcher, but, you know, he was serviceable when he played for Chicago. And it just feels like since he signed for the Cardinals last year, they just have no idea what to do with him, and it's kind of unfortunate.
Yeah, I completely agree with everything you said. The Cardinals have kind of been not a joke of a franchise, but they seem to have really bad player development for the minors. I mean, whenever they get rid of a guy, they go on to be great. I mean, look at Adolis Garcia, Randy Arozarena, Tyler O'Neill. Those are just a few examples. There's a lot more, so it seems their player development is bad. I mean, look at Jordan Walker right now. He's not doing anything. Their whole team is kind of falling off. Nolan Arenado's production fell off. Paul Goldschmidt looks old and can't hit fastballs. Their team just looks really, really bad. I don't know what's going on, but the Cardinals just have a bad aura around them. They do not look like a good team at all. And then this is just the icing on the cake where you take a guy who, like you said, pretty good backstop, pretty good hitter for a catcher, and then you move him up, you mess with him a little bit, and then this happens. I mean, just brutal overall for Wilson Contreras and the Cardinals. But yeah, that team is just not looking good. Moving on, we have Wyatt Langford of the Rangers, who was placed on the 10-day IL on Monday, May 6th, with a right hamstring strain. Ryan Pepiot of the Rays was placed on the 15-day IL on Wednesday, retroactive to May 6th, with a left lower leg contusion. Pepiot was struck by a comebacker during his start on May 5th. He left the game and then proceeded to be placed on the injured list. Taj Bradley was reinstated and made his 2024 season debut on Friday against the Yankees. So If he's out there in your leagues, I would suggest adding Taj Bradley, especially if you have Ryan Pepiot on your team, because Taj Bradley can be good. We've seen him pitch very well in the majors last season, and then obviously he didn't stay in the majors, but if Taj Bradley can really find it, he could be a great pitcher for your teams. Josh Lowe of the Rays returned from the IL on Monday. Dansby Swanson of the Cubs was absent from Wednesday's lineup due to a right knee issue. Cody Bellinger of the Cubs returned from the IL on Tuesday. We'll talk more about his return a little bit later on. Christian Javier of the Astros is set to return from the IL on Saturday against the Tigers. He's been out with a neck problem. Jorge Soler of the Giants was placed on the 10-day IL on Wednesday, retroactive to May 5th, with a right shoulder strain. Elliot Ramos was recalled in a corresponding move. Jung-Hoo Lee of the Giants has a sore foot and sat out of Thursday's game. Stephen Kwan of the Guardians was placed on the 10-day IL on Monday, May 6th, with a left hamstring strain. He's expected to miss 4 weeks. Jake Berger of the Marlins returned from the IL on Monday. Edward Cabrera of the Marlins was placed on the 15-day IL on Wednesday, May 8th, with a right shoulder impingement. Luis Renjifo of the Angels was placed on the 10-day IL, retroactive to May 6th, with an illness. Brian Wu of the Mariners was activated from the 15-day IL on Friday and started against the Athletics. Nick Pivetta of the Red Sox was activated from the 15-day IL on Wednesday and started against the Braves. He unfortunately got shelled in his still-ill start, giving up 5 earned runs in 4 innings pitched with 1 strikeout. Brian Bello of the Red Sox is expected to be activated from the 15-day IL on Sunday and start against the Nationals. Luis Robert Jr. of the White Sox is nearing a rehab assignment. Tyler Black of the Brewers was optioned back to AAA Nashville on Wednesday. Robert Gasser was called up by the Brewers and made his MLB debut on Friday against the Cardinals. And last but not least, the most important one, I would say, the most hype, of course, Paul Skenes will be called up by the Pirates on Saturday, May 11th, and make his highly anticipated Major League debut against the Cubs. So, welcome to the show, Paul Skenes. Really cool to see that. I think the last guy to be this hyped as a pitching prospect was Steven Strasburg. I mean, Paul Skenes really has that hype and aura around him that everyone is expecting the next big thing out of. So, pretty cool to see. John, any last notes about this group?
I know you mentioned at the top, but the whole Luis Arraez trade, it's super interesting in terms of how it deals with kind of the infield rotation for the Padres. I wrote about it in the Pitcherlist newsletter on Saturday, but basically with Arraez, it's kind of forced Manny Machado to move from DH back to third base, and Bogaerts DH'd and Arraez played second for one game, and Arraez, you know, has already had like a day off. It's interesting to see what they're going to do with that position, because they could probably cycle Arraez, Machado, Cronenworth, and maybe Bogaerts just through that DH position and just, you know, give guys, you know, occasional day offs here and there. So in terms of, you know, the guys on your roster who you probably care about, playing time probably isn't going to change too much, but it is kind of an interesting wrinkle of adding basically another infielder to that whole lineup who his primary position is probably just going to be DH for this team, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, it's super weird. Like I said, they have all former shortstops. I believe we talked about that on the show one time where they have everyone. Like Fernando Tatis was a shortstop. Now he's a right fielder. Xander Bogaerts was a shortstop. Now he's a second baseman. Jake Cronenworth played shortstop. He's a first baseman. They have so many guys. Ha-Seong Kim, shortstop. It's actually insane. Like every person on their roster played shortstop at one point, and now they've been converted to something else. And it's wild to see. I mean, did they need Luis Arraez? I don't think so, but I mean, he's a great hitter. He's someone that can compete for a batting title. So adding that guy is always going to be helpful, right? But what are we doing?
Yeah. I mean, if you look at their roster, it's like, they've been kind of slow to start this season for sure. So they could have used someone at the top of the lineup just to get on base and do things like that. In terms of, you know, their bench, it's not really anything to write home about. It's you know, no truly notable players there. So getting a guy like Arraez makes a lot of sense. But at the same time, yeah, it's kind of like, did you really need to make that move? And for a team that is trying to compete in the NL West, you know, I think every incremental addition they can make to the team probably helps a little bit.
Yeah, that's very true. I agree with that. But we'll see how the Padres do, because last year they failed expectations greatly, and hopefully they won't do it again. I mean, they have a lot of good players. They obviously lost Juan Soto, but a lot of guys are performing pretty well, so hopefully they can grind it out and make something happen this season, because I think the expectations are still very high for the Padres.
Oh, completely. Yep.
Now, we are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we will start talking about the player performances from this past week. You won't want to miss it, so stay tuned.
She said, get out the chat room and clean my Glad Stretch. Feeling fine, so fresh.
The Glad Girl Group coming at you with a throwback jam. That was Glad Force Flex Drawstring Trash Bags featuring Pine Sol Original Scent. And that's better than all good. It's all Glad.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
All right, we are back, and it's time to recap the player performances from this past week. We have a whole week to cover, and John, start us off with the weekend, May 3rd to May 5th.
Yeah, we're going to start like we always do with the batters. Thanks to Ryan Amore and Kyle Stanzel for writing the articles over the weekend for the hitter recaps. And we're going to start with a guy that you probably are pretty familiar with, Brett Baty of the Mets, 3-for-4 with 2 homers, 2 runs, and 4 RBIs on Friday. Baty, If you don't know who he is, he's basically a former prospect who, you know, had a lot of power in the minors, but his major league career has been pretty disappointing. That being said, he's only amassed 533 career plate appearances in 3 seasons, so it's not a great sample size. On Friday, he hit 2 homers, like I mentioned. One of them went up into the rafters in Tropicana, and then the other one was basically 108-mile-an-hour exit velocity shot off the bat. That went into right field, and that was ended up being actually kind of the nail in the coffin for the Mets as they won that game 10-8. He is currently the everyday third baseman for the Mets. He has improved strikeout and walk rates this season, but he has pretty inconsistent counting stats, and that makes him a challenging pickup in most leagues. He is on pace to get 70-plus runs in RBI, so if you need some help in that area and you have like an open corner infield spot, he might be available, but even then I'd probably only suggest that for like an NL only league. The next player we're going to talk about, Brent Rooker, on Saturday went 3-for-4 with 2 runs, 5 RBI, 1 walk, and also 2 homers. The Oakland put up 20 runs on Saturday, and Brent Rooker was a big part of that with 2 homers. Both of them were over 110 miles an hour, and they also hit them in the same inning, which is kind of insane. The 2023 All-Star has continued to look impressive this season with 9 homers, 24 RBI, and a 277, 370, 628 slash line. So this guy has an OPS over 1,000, which is insane. The strikeout rate is still incredibly high. I believe it's over 30%. But if you're in a league that tracks OBP, slugging, or OPS, I'd give a look at Rooker if he's available. His barrel rate's in the 99th percentile, and his expected slugging, according to PitcherList, is 598. So this isn't all noise. I think it's very repeatable. That being said, Rooker did kind of have a drop-off in the second half of last season, and I wouldn't be surprised if something like that happened again, because while he is a pretty decent player, he's not an MVP-level player. That's what he's playing like right now. And then finally wrapping up with Vlad Guerrero Jr., who on Sunday went 2-for-4 with a run, 4 RBI, a homer, and a walk. To say that Vlad has been a disappointment this season is probably an understatement, as based on year-to-date numbers, he's the 24th best first baseman in the major leagues right now. He tried to turn around the narrative on Sunday with a 109-mile-per-hour grand slam off Mackenzie Gore, and he got on base 3 times. However, on the season, he has a career-high strikeout rate, but he does also have a career-high walk rate, which is kind of weird. He's nowhere close to being on pace to exceed his numbers from last year's disappointing season, but if there's anything to be excited about, he is barreling ball a little bit more this season. Not a lot, but a little bit more, and he continues to make a lot of hard contact. However, his ground ball rate is nearly 60%, and his average on those hard hits is below league average. His average launch angle is also flatter than last year. Again, average launch angle isn't the best metric to use when trying to judge if a guy is getting under the ball enough, but it is kind of showing that high of a ground ball rate leading to a below average on those balls is kind of worrying.
So Brett Beatty, I'm a big fan of. I love the strides that he's making this season. The Mets rookies in general are having more fun and look great. So I would definitely suggest in a league where you do have a corner infield slot, or you have a lot of batting slots to fill, or those deeper leagues or NL only leagues, Brett Beatty is definitely someone you want to roster. He's not rosterable in 10 team or 12 team leagues really that only have a third base spot and maybe a utility spot or two util spots. So I would ignore him in those situations, but Brett Beatty looks really serviceable for those corner infield leagues and those really deep leagues. So definitely keep an eye on him, pick him up, stash him away. Brett Beatty looks great. Brent Rooker's been heating up. He did the same thing last year. He was an all-star last year. He had a bunch of home runs, and then he kind of flamed out in the second half. So I'm not really sure if this is sustainable. I think that he can keep this up, of course, but he's been on quite a tear, and Rooker did this all of the first half last season. So definitely pick him up and ride him out until the flame burns out yet again. It might not, you know, it might stick and you might have a solid outfielder for the rest of the season for fantasy, but the chances are he'll probably flame out. So pick him up, ride the hot streak, and then make sure you're ready to cut bait if it's looking bad. If he's going 0-4 and 0-5 for, you know, a week and a half straight, then you probably should cut ties, but definitely ride him while he's hot because he is a serviceable bat. And then for Vlad Jr., I have never been a Vlad Jr. guy. I think across all of my fantasy leagues, since he's been called up, I've had zero shares of him. And I don't know why that is. I don't know if it's because the ground ball rate is absolutely horrible. I don't know if that's just because I see him as a replaceable level player, and a lot of people will come at me for that. Like, obviously he's Vlad Guerrero's son, obviously he has the prospect pedigree, he hits the ball extremely hard, but he's at one season where you're like, okay, that production is first two round value worth, and that season was played in predominantly minor league stadiums, and that's not good because that's not sustainable. And he's had one decent season, which I believe was last year, but does that make him a second round pick or a third round pick? I don't think so. Like, the fact that people were taking Vlad Jr. before Pete Alonso, to me, was kind of head scratch worthy. Like, I don't know. Is it just me that is kind of out on Vlad Jr.? Like, I know you were really high on him coming into the season. So what's your take on this? Because like I said, I've just never been a believer. I've never been high on him. I thought the Toronto Blue Jays would have a better season overall. I think they had a rough patch last year, and I thought that the Blue Jays would be able to turn things around and all the players would be good. I was very high on Dalton Varsho. I thought George Springer would have a good season. So I like those guys. But to me, Vlad Jr. and Bo Bichette are just two guys I never wanted to invest that high draft capital in, because I just saw their stats in other players like Josh Naylor or Christian Walker for Vlad Jr. And then for Bo Bichette, like, I would rather CJ Abrams, who was going like two rounds later. So I don't know. I just don't like these two guys, I guess.
I am regretting my love for Vlad Guerrero Jr.
Okay.
Yeah, I have him in, I think I have him in TGFBI. I know I definitely have him in another league. And it's so frustrating because I was looking at his stats today as we're prepping for the pod, right? And that hard hit rate is incredible. But the problem is that 60% ground ball rate, it just means that, you know, it's not exactly half of those hard hit balls, but a lot of them are just slamming straight into the ground. And he hasn't had any major like injury issues. So this isn't like a thing where, you know, where Christian Yelich, where he had his bad back and that led to him, even though he hits the ball hard, he slams it into the ground a lot. That's not what Vlad's dealing with here. And it feels stupid to tell a major league hitter whose dad was also a great major league hitter to just get under the ball more, right? Like, it feels dumb to say to just say like, hey, that's all you need to do. And I've not done a deep dive on Vlad, so I'm not going to claim that I have the secret sauce to figure out, you know, how to make him better. But for a guy who hits the ball so hard, you really expect a lot more from him, and it just isn't happening. It's like very disappointing. And I've seen a lot of, you know, hype or kind of stuff on Twitter. It's like, what if that 2019 season was really just the peak for Vlad, and he's actually this guy that we all expect, right? And so there's a little bit of worry there. I still want to hold on to him, because the reality is, if he can smoke, you know, 100 mile an hour grounders, usually those still turn up like hits. It is very frustrating, and I completely understand if people want to cut bait on Vlad.
I agree as well. I mean, you would think that hitting the ball that hard would result in more hits and better BABIP and just better stats across the board, but we haven't seen it yet, and it's just so frustrating. And I know that the potential is there. I know he could be a 40 home run, 100 RBI guy year in and year out. That's what we expected out of him. I mean, he's a great hitter, hits the ball hard, looks fantastic. But when you drive the ball into the ground, or you're hitting just line drives and you can't elevate the ball, I don't know what to expect out of Vlad Jr. Like, can we really expect Vlad Jr. to have a better season than Christian Walker at this point? I don't know. I really can't tell you. Like, it's a coin flip. I almost would rather Josh Naylor or Christian Walker than Vlad, and that's a scary thing to say. So, I don't know. I've always been out on them, and until I see something year in and year out of an improvement of hitting the ball higher, I think I'm going to just be out on Vlad Jr. my whole fantasy career, which stinks because he's a fun player, but I don't know. I can't get behind it. So, definitely something to keep your head on, because, I don't know, Vlad Jr. seems to be an enigma at this point, but who knows?
I do want to do a deep dive in him at some point. I know there's been some articles out on PitcherList the past couple of weeks about, you know, Toronto and how, even though they're slumping, like, they might end up being really good. I think I just want to, these guys who hit the ball so hard but then hit them straight to the ground, I'm always incredibly interested by that, because it feels like you got the bat speed. All you need to figure out is the bat path. And it feels like it's easier to figure out bat path than it is to figure out bat speed. But
yeah,
again, I didn't play, you know, baseball at a high level at any age. So, you know, what do I know?
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, that's fair. Who are we? We're just people who comment. I played baseball in high school and little league and whatnot. I know it's difficult to play the game, but, and as a spectator, we can say, hey, just elevate the ball more, you know, like, right, get under it. But it's definitely not that easy. But yeah, for fantasy purposes, I don't want anything to do with Vlad.
All right. Well, moving on to pitchers, we are going to start with Sonny Gray, who on Friday last week, going up against the Chicago White Sox, again, who are the worst team in Major League Baseball, although the Marlins are giving them a run for their money in that stat. Seven innings with no one runs, three hits, one walk, six strikeouts in a win. I personally miss Sonny Gray on the Twins, and that's partially because our fifth spot is just garbage. But besides the point, he did start the season IL, but it's clear that he hasn't really lost a step this season, with the caveat that he did get wrecked in today, Thursday start. But as of before that start, he was top 10 in wins, ERA, and strikeout rate, and he was top 15 in whip. The stark improvement so far this season has been that walk rate, which dropped nearly 3%. That all being said, it is a 5-game sample, and I imagine after today's game, those stats are not going to look very good. In the start before the White Sox, he also gave up 4 runs against the Mets, too, so it hasn't been completely smooth sailing for Sonny Gray. In this one, he only earned 9 whiffs, getting the majority of his strikes on called strikes, which isn't super abnormal for most pitchers, but it is something to be aware of for a guy who, you know, should be an ace. We'd like to see that swinging strike rate go up. If you have Gray, obviously keep him on your team. There's no reason to, you know, cut loose. But I would not really go out to break the bank for him yet in a trade. Although maybe after day start, maybe some guy is willing to sell him for a little bit less. Next, we're going to talk about Christian Scott, who went up against the Rays in his major league debut for the Mets. 6.2 innings with 1 earned run, 5 hits, 1 walk, and 6 strikeouts. Other than a shaky first inning where he gave up 3 hits and a run, Scott looked really good, mostly going fastball sweeper, but also tossing in his slider, which kind of acts like a cutter. about 20% of the time-ish. However, this was a very good situation for Scott as he got to face the Rays, who are not a very scary offensive team, and he didn't have to face many opposite-handed batters as well, which obviously is pretty good for a guy who relies a lot on a sweeper. It remains to be seen what he can do against a mostly lefty lineup since he is so sweeper-slider focused. He does face Atlanta on Saturday, which will be an incredibly tough test, but he is rostered in less than half of all leagues, so he should be available for you. I would go check out PL writer Carson Picard's article on Scott that he wrote earlier in the season if you want to get the full scoop on who Christian Scott actually is. And then finally, Nestor Cortez of the Yankees went up against Detroit in a no decision, 6.1 innings with 2 earned runs, 3 hits, 1 walk, and 9 strikeouts. Nestor took full advantage of a poor Tigers team and cooked with his sweeper and cutter. That four-seamer also helped out with 10 called strikes. Cortez is not the incredible pitcher we were all expecting him to be after his breakout 2022 season, as the ERA still isn't great on the season, but he has decent swinging strike rates, has a very low walk rate this season, and most nights still has a good chance at a win, although his current 1-3 record doesn't necessarily show that. He still has gone 5 innings or more in 7 out of his 8 outings, so if he could just get a little bit more run support from some guys named Judge, Soto, and Stanton, he'd probably be a valuable bottom of the rotation guy in most fantasy formats.
Sonny Gray, like you mentioned, had a horrible start on Thursday, got torched by the Brewers. And yeah, I mean, I guess if a manager who rosters Gray would be a little bit uneasy by the start and wants to sell him a little cheaper, then yeah, I would acquire him. Sonny Gray seems to be an absolutely fine pitcher. He looks great this season and just had this one hiccup. But in this start on Friday, he looked fantastic against the White Sox. Obviously, it's the White Sox, but still, great start nonetheless. Christian Scott, I'm super excited about. Definitely go and check out that article by Carson Picard. It is worth reading. Tells you a little bit more about him. And from my standpoint, I noticed as a Met fan that he has a very similar release to an ex-Met pitcher who happens to be someone we'll talk about in a little bit. He looks very similar to Zach Wheeler in his delivery. If you see a side-by-side of Christian Scott and Zach Wheeler, it is eerily similar. So that gives me a lot of hope. Scott's stuff is nasty. He looks really, really good. So if he's out there, we told you last week, pick up Christian Scott, and I'm staying true to that. If he's out there, pick up Christian Scott. I heard rumors that when Senga returns, they're going to make it a 6-man rotation to help Scott stay in the majors and pitch the whole year, to allow Senga to get more rest and pitch the whole year. So they might go a 6-man rotation, and Christian Scott will be very, very helpful for your fantasy team. So pick him up now if he's still out there, and hold on tight because he looks pretty good. But that Atlanta matchup is definitely scary, and it may make it seem that he's not good. But don't be fooled by it. It's just one start and his toughest test in the majors. If it's bad, still hold firm because I believe he's going to be great. And then Nestor, he's been very good this season. Obviously, the 3.72 ERA doesn't really back that, but the 103 whip is very low and it's very good. He's got nearly a strikeout per inning. He's getting quality starts. He's going deep into games. I mean, he already has 1 8-inning start and 2 7-inning starts. So Nestor Cortez has gotten the job done very, very quietly. So I'm happy with him because when you took him in drafts, you probably got him really later on. And it's paying off. He is a serviceable SP4, SP5, and that is perfectly okay with me. Now, moving on to Monday, May 6th. Thanks to Christian Ottman for the Morel Boost hitter recap article. We start with the title boy himself, Christopher Morel of the Cubs, who went 1-for-4 with a homer, a run, 2 RBI, a walk, and a stolen base. We haven't really spoken much about Morel this season, and he's been having a fantastic year so far. Morel has slashed .211, .301, .429 with 21 runs, 24 RBI, 8 home runs, and 4 stolen bases. Now, that average might not seem great, but the good news is that Morel's expected batting average is .270, which is over 60 points better than his current average. Also, the main concern for Morel going into the season was his strikeout rate. The last 2 seasons, it's been above 30%. However, this year, it's dropped to 21.3%, which is fantastic. He also has a career-high walk rate of 12.1%, so if those keep up, he could be very, very good. Morel seems to have made some improvements in his game, and he's a player that could have 30-15 upside. That's 30 home runs, 15 stolen bases. Kind of the current pace. So, Christopher Morel, keep it up. You look great. And then we have Nick Castellanos of the Phillies, who went 2-for-2 with a double, a run, an RBI, and 2 walks. it looks like Castellanos has woken up from whatever slump he was in to start the season. Over the past week, Castellanos has slashed 318, 375, 500. He didn't have any doubles up until this game on Monday. And since then, he hasn't gone a game without hitting a double. He hit one on Monday, hit one on Tuesday, hit one on Wednesday. Castellanos is certainly a buy-low candidate right now, especially in that scathing hot Phillies lineup, and I'm personally thinking about acquiring him myself in a few leagues where I can trade for him. I do have a few shares of him already, but John, I wanted to pose this question to you.
Mm-hmm.
Would you drop right now Colton Cowser, who is currently being semi-platoon kind of, he's got everyday playing time, but against lefties sometimes he sits, and he's kind of struggling. He's not doing what he was, obviously, during that hot stretch. That was not possible to keep up. But would you drop Colton Cowser to get Nick Castellanos if he was out there in your league?
Ooh, that's tough. I'll be honest. I think I would go with Cowser.
Okay.
Part of it is I do feel like this slump for Castellanos is kind of real. Like, yes, he has done really well this past week. That's for sure. But at the same time, there really hasn't been a lot of success for Castellanos either. Last season was not like anything to write home about for him either. He was just like an okay outfielder. I still think Cowser still has some potential. Like, yes, obviously he's not going to be hitting a homer every single game. We knew that wasn't going to happen, but I still think there's still some growth in Cowser's game that could make him end up with a better line than Castellanos at the end of the season. So I think for that, I'm going to stick with Cowser. And it does feel like the Orioles have just, you know, fully given him the job. Like they're not necessarily going to take him out of the lineup when Austin Hayes comes back from IL. So to that point, I just don't think that there's a great reason to go for Castellanos in that situation. But I also wouldn't fault you if you did.
Right. I mean, looking at the advanced metrics and the Baseball Savant page of Nick Castellanos, he is like under 25th percentile in everything. I mean, his page is super blue, really nothing to be excited about. I mean, the only thing that's over 50th percentile is sweet spot percentage, and that really doesn't tell you too much. So it doesn't look great for Castellanos. I want to believe in the overall player of Nick Castellanos, right? Like, we've seen him go through slumps and then come out the other side with a fantastic season, right? Like, we've seen him put up 30 plus homers. We've seen him do very many things that are helpful for your fantasy teams. And literally, dating back to last season, he hit 29 home runs, had 106 RBI, 272 batting average, 311 OBP. And his Baseball Savant page wasn't great then either.
Mm-hmm.
And 29 homers, 100 RBI is very helpful.
Yeah, that plays.
In 2022, he had a down year, right? 13 home runs, 62 RBI in 136 games, 263 batting average, not good. But the year before that, 34 homers, 100 RBI, 309 batting average. Like, obviously it's 3 years of a difference and he is getting up there in age. He's 32. It's not too old. I mean, that's pretty much my age, so let's not call him old. But but he can give you the production, especially in that Phillies lineup. So for me, it's a big coin flip because you want to believe that Castellanos, the 30 home run, 100 RBI producer, is going to come around. And if he's already went through that 1 month slump, then it's going to balance itself out, right? Like, mm-hmm. You're going to get that production in bunches now to make up for what happened. Now, that's not always the case. Of course, he could just be a bum. But I don't know. It's so tough because Cowser's up and coming, and we really don't know what to expect out of him. But he's been very good, and his Baseball Savant page looks excellent. And then on the other hand, Castellanos, who's a proven bat, kind of looks worse. So I thought I'd bring up that debate because maybe a lot of people are going through that. I mean, in my home league, that's a possibility for me as well because we're a shallower 10-team league. Castellanos, after a month, wasn't doing well, and you can cut him for someone like Tommy Pham, for instance, and he was dropped. And I have Colton Cowser, so maybe I make that swap. It's tough because I was trying to trade Colton Cowser around. It is a keeper league, so I was hoping some people would bite at him, but no one really wants him. So then I'm posed with the question, hey, who would I rather have as a bench bat, Castellanos or Cowser? And I'm kind of torn. So yeah, that is definitely a debate. And if you are between the two, we don't fault you for picking up Castellanos or dropping Cowser, but make sure you have a good option out there. Otherwise, it will be useless. Moving on to pitchers for Monday, thanks to Nick Pollock for the T-Lex exhibition SP Roundup article. We start with Zach Wheeler of the Phillies. He went 7 innings pitched, no earned runs, 4 hits, 1 walk, and 11 strikeouts against the Giants. Wheeler has easily been the best pitcher in all of baseball this year. Yes, Ranger Suarez, his teammate, has gone on a wonderful run. Shota Imanaga has been downright unbelievable. Jarred Jones has mightily impressed us. But Wheeler is that guy. I personally think that he's the SP1 now. The debate earlier this season after Cole and Strider both got hurt was who is number one? Who's going to be number one on the list, Burns or Wheeler? And we all initially put Burns first. But Wheeler has just proven that he's numero uno and that fastball is unmatched in this league. I mean, he had 19 whiffs and 40% CSW against the Giants. Just very, very good stuff from Zach Wheeler. Next, we have Mitch Keller of the Pirates, who went 9 innings pitched, 1 earned run, 5 hits, 1 walk, and 5 strikeouts against the Angels. It's always a spectacle nowadays when a pitcher completes a game because it's so rare these days. So kudos to Keller on going the full 9. However, Mitch has been mostly disappointing for this season. I can't say Keller's been disappointing because that's me and I think I've performed pretty well on this podcast, but you listeners let me know. But Mitch, on the other hand, only had 7 whiffs, a 23% CSW, and the swinging strike rate was just 6% in this one. Those numbers aren't very good. He seems like a glorified streamer right now, and as Nick would say, he's a premium cherry bomb.
Yeah, I love Zach Wheeler. He's so good. He's such a great workhorse, and he backs it up with strikeouts. It's fun to see. Obviously, it feels like a coin flip between Burns and Wheeler. I think you'd love to have either of them on your team. I don't really have a strong opinion on who's SP1 now, but man, Wheeler cooks all the time, and it's always great to see. It's always great to have him on your fantasy team for sure. And with Mitch Keller, I honestly think this was more of a game that he was facing the Angels, because the Angels already don't have Mike Trout, and they already weren't very good without him or with him. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, you kind of expect some guys to do well against a team that bad. And it's not like Mitch Keller is bad. Obviously, he's big news for him. Obviously, over the offseason was his fastball velocity was still up, and he's still a pretty solid pitcher. But yeah, those numbers in regards to his swinging strike rate just kind of show that this isn't super sustainable. You could do this against the Angels, but you know, against a league average team, it'll probably be tougher to replicate a performance like this.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's definitely a blame it on the Angels, and Zach Wheeler is a stud.
All right, well, moving on to Tuesday's games, thanks to Mark Stubinger for upping the ante, hitter recap article. We're going to start with Marcus Semien of the Texas Rangers, 4-for-5 with a double, a homer, 3 runs, and 5 RBI in this one. Not only is this line incredibly impressive, it's actually even better when you realize Semien was a triple shy of the cycle by the end of the second inning. He opened the game with a leadoff home run before singling and doubling in the Rangers' 10-run second inning. Semien's had a bit of a slow start to the season, but he's still 4th in total runs, 9th in total RBI, and is in the top 15 of expected average and expected WOBA. That being said, of course, it's kind of slow because he's only had one stolen base to speak of this season. That being said, he only had 14 last year, so this is kind of on brand for Semien. He's helping you in pretty much every other category. I don't know if he's the best second baseman in baseball right now, but he sure is playing like it. And then, as Lee mentioned, Cody Bellinger came back on Tuesday, going 3-for-4 with a homer, a run, and an RBI. The Cubs activated him on the IL because of that fractured rib cage, but he quickly shook off the rust in his first game back. He had a first inning flyout, but then he launched his 6th homer of the year before adding 2 more singles against the San Diego bullpen. Bellinger, of course, had that huge bounce back campaign last season, but his underwhelming contact quality metrics last year had many wondering if he could repeat that performance. In the early going, of course, with the really small sample size, it looks like the answer is a resounding yes. He's meaningfully raised his average exit velocity, his barrel rate, and his hard hit rates compared to last year. And it's still, again, all relatively sample size. I'm going to harp that a lot about Bellinger. But the fact that his strikeout rate has also stayed about the same, but the walk rate has increased, is potentially showing some improved plate discipline as well. So, you know, if you were able to ride out the Cody Bellinger injury, he is back early in the season, ready to help your fantasy teams.
Not much to say about these two guys. Marcus Semien, obviously one of the best second basemen in all of baseball for fantasy. Love that guy. He is so very good. And then Cody Bellinger, yeah, he's coming around. We hope that he can keep up what he did last season and bounce back from this injury, and this first game was a good sign of that.
Yeah, well, talking about the two pitchers we're going to mention next, both these guys are not as widely rostered as Bellinger and Semien. We're going to start with Christopher Sanchez of the Phillies going up against Toronto in a win, 7 innings with 1 earned run, 6 hits, 2 walks, and 5 strikeouts. It's been an inconsistent start for Sanchez, who, to me at least, was a preseason candidate for the guy who kind of cooked at the end of last season, but no one really noticed, and he could maybe be a top 40 guy this year. He's dealt with issues with ERA, and he's had 2 games where he only struck out 1 batter. But he's also had a 10-strikeout game win as well. So a lot of good, a lot of bad. But on Tuesday against Toronto, he dominated with his changeup, had 6 whiffs on 23 pitches. His sliders were generating strikes, and the sinker was locking up batters to the tune of 11 called strikes on that pitch alone. Can this stick? I don't know. But it can certainly succeed, and we just need it to be consistent. Obviously, with him, he's more of a location guy to be able to generate strikes. So if he's able to kind of maintain that control, I think there's a lot of potential here. And then moving on to Luis Gil of the Yankees, going to go up against Houston with a win, 6 innings with 1 earned run, 1 hit, 4 walks, and 5 strikeouts. Yes, you don't love those 4 walks, and his slider and his changeup returned less than a 60% strike rate, which is not very good for breaking pitches. However, he had very good location. The four-seamer was up at the top half. His changeups were underneath, again, executing what we know as the Blake Snell blueprint. Obviously, it was well done. Wasn't chaotic. But obviously, there's still a little that Gil can improve on. He gets the Rays next, who are an incredibly soft matchup, and he still has that elite strikeout rate. He's definitely worth holding on to for now, but obviously hold him with a very loose hand.
So both of these guys are people that are floaters, quote unquote. It's kind of what I call them, for people that in 10 and 12 team leagues aren't must roster pitchers, but they kind of end up on different people's teams all season until they hit that hot stretch and they stick on someone's team for a prolonged period of time, right? Like, you're just
I like that a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's what they are. Like, there are streamers, which are guys that are very lowly rostered, that aren't great pitchers, that you take advantage of poor matchups. But these guys are good pitchers that just don't seem to stick on your team. So they kind of float around and then end up on someone's team at the end of the season. So both of these guys kind of give me that feeling. And I think out of these two, it's tough. Christopher Sanchez for ratios, I think, is far above Luis Gil because Gil's walk rate is horrible.
Yeah.
And Gil is much better for strikeouts. So if you need more of a strikeout boost and you want to take a gamble on a young up-and-coming pitcher that has really good stuff, then go with Luis Gil. Maybe hold on to him and ride him out. But if you need someone more stable, if you already have a lot of high upside arms like Brian Wu and Nick Pivetta, somebody that, you know, is more volatile and you need someone that's more stable, Christopher Sanchez is probably the guy you want to hold. So I think both of these guys are great pitchers. I think they deserve to be rostered. And if you're in one of those leagues where he's a floater, you might want to take one of them and hold on to them based on what your staff needs and how you want to build your rotation. So I think both these guys are good. They had great starts in these two, and hopefully they keep that up. But before we get into Wednesday and Thursday's performances, we are going to take another quick break, and we'll be back after this.
She said, get out the chat room and clean my Glad Stretch. Feeling fine, so fresh. The Glad Girl Group coming at you with a throwback jam. That was Glad Force Flex Drawstring Trash Bags featuring Pine Sol Original Scent. And that's better than all good. It's all Glad.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Okay, it's time to talk about Wednesday, May 8th. Thanks to Seth Klusmeyer for the Ozuna from the Braves hitter recap article. We're going to start yet again with the title boy, Marcell Ozuna from the Braves. He went 2-for-3 with 2 home runs, 2 runs, 4 RBI, and a walk. Ozuna now leads the league in home runs with 12. He's 100th percentile in ex-WOBA, ex-batting average, ex-slugging, and he's over 90th percentile in all of average exit velocity, barrel percentage, hard hit percentage, and sweet spot percentage. It is safe to say that without Ozuna from the Braves being on the Braves, their team wouldn't have the current 22-12 record that they have. With Acuna, Olsen, and Riley all struggling and Albies being hurt, Ozuna has really elevated his game to put the team on his back. We've seen him be this good before, several times actually, even dating back to just last year. So it's not out of this world to believe that he can keep this up. He was a steal for anyone that drafted him this fantasy season, and if you have Ozuna on your team, I'm pretty sure you're holding on to dear life for him because you're not giving him up for anything. Next, we have Shea Langeliers of the Athletics. He went 5-for-9 with a double, a triple, 2 home runs, 3 runs, and 8 RBI. Across a doubleheader against the Rangers, Langeliers put up the fantasy stats that you'd expect from Aaron Judge in a week in simply just one day. He completed the cycle over the course of 2 games, hit 2 long balls, and really showed that he can be an offensive force from behind the dish. In fantasy leagues, he should probably already be rostered in any 2 catcher leagues, but he may be worth a look in those 12-team leagues or deeper if you currently have a struggling catcher on your roster.
So I am a big Shea Langeliers guy, and the only reason I am is because he was on my dynasty roster. He's been basically sitting in my minors for, you know, basically a season and a half. Finally came up last year. Didn't do so great, but this season he's actually not terrible. So, yeah, big fan of him and his power. Obviously, the strikeout rate is something a little worrying, but so he's never going to help you in an average league that much. But dude has absolute power. He can easily hit 30 homers, I think. And yeah, he's a lot of fun. Marcelo Ozuna, I'll give you a thought experiment because this happened in my home league. Our league is runs, homers, RBI, so pretty standard there. But we do OBP, slugging, and net steals. So obviously for Ozuna, we don't care about net steals. He's not getting any steals. He got traded for Nico Horner.
Oh.
But the reason why this happened was because that manager also had Shohei Ohtani on his team.
Oh.
So he had 2 DHs, essentially. So he had to trade one and ended up going for Nico Horner, which I think is an interesting deal because I think Ozuna definitely, you know, has a lot of offensive upside for sure, right? And Horner, you know, he can play shortstop. He can play second. He's a pretty decent bat for the most part. I think I like Ozuna in that trade specifically. But it's also one that manager had to make because he had 2 DHs. So kind of unfortunate situation there.
So in that league, Ozuna only has DH eligibility, no outfield,
correct,
right?
No outfield, yeah.
Okay, so yeah, that's really tough. Obviously, with Ohtani having util only, DH only, and I'm assuming just one spot, correct?
Correct, yeah. That's why he had to be traded.
Yeah, so that's really, really tough because in Yahoo leagues, for instance, Ozuna has outfield eligibility.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty easy to just say, hey, you know, we're going to keep a hold of this guy, especially if you have Ohtani, who's, you know, DH only. So in my opinion, I would 100% rather the Ozuna side.
Yep.
And I get you have to trade him, but I think you could have gotten much more than Nico Horner, especially because Ozuna is currently leading the league in pretty much everything, home runs and every baseball savant metric that it can be named.
Yeah.
So I think that, like, if I was going to trade Ozuna, if I had to, I would have shot for someone like CJ Abrams.
Mm.
I would have said, you know what? I can't put this guy anywhere. I need to trade one. Nico Horner, sure, good for net steals. He might fill a middle infield need, second base, shortstop, whatever. But I would have shot higher. I would have shot for CJ Abrams. I would have shot for maybe Trey Turner now that he's hurt. Maybe you stomach that a little bit. And then when he comes back, you have, you know, a really good top 3 shortstop, maybe target Francisco Lindor, you know, like I would have went for the moon for Ozuna. And does Ozuna justify the return of a Lindor or an Abrams? Not really, because mm-hmm. they were drafted super high above them, but the draft is long gone now.
Yeah.
And we're looking at performance right now, and no one is better than Ozuna right now in terms of power metrics. So if I trying to acquire that guy. Right now, you got to look at him as like Aaron Judge, right? Like you're acquiring the production of an Aaron Judge type player. So you got to give up something good. And I think Nico Horner is just like a tad shy of what you could get for Ozuna. I think he could have gotten a little bit more. But obviously, when you have to trade a guy like that, it's probably good that you got something for him other than just wasting those stats on your bench.
Yep.
So it's a tough call. But yeah, no, that's a rough situation there. Moving on to pitchers from Wednesday. Thanks to Nick Pollock for the Tanner Bybee River SP Roundup article. Love that title. We start with Dylan Cease of the Padres, who went 7 innings pitched, no earned runs, 1 hit, 2 walks, and 12 strikeouts against the Cubs. Damn, Cease balled out against the Cubs in this one. He put up a golden goal, 24 whiffs on the day, and a 39% CSW. His four-seamer was electric. The slider was getting whiffs and called strikes. He threw some cutters. It was exactly what we wanted to see out of Cease. He's been great this year since putting on a Padres uniform, and hopefully it holds up all year because he was discounted this year in drafts, and he is looking like an ace for your teams. Speaking of aces, Chris Sale of the Braves went 6 innings pitched, no earned runs, 6 hits, 1 walk, and 10 strikeouts against the Red Sox. Sale finally got his AGA tag and showed why he did. He's executing the Blake Snell blueprint with 4-seam fastballs up in the zone, his trademark Sale slider, and really good changeups that are resulting in outings like this one in a revenge game against his former team, of course. He had 20 whiffs and a 39% CSW, which is just filthy, so it's great to see the best version of Chris Sale. And did we expect any less? I mean, come on, the guy went to the Braves. Of course he's going to be back and just amazing. Like, it's just so obvious that this was going to happen, right? Like, I could have called this one from a mile away. It's just unbelievable. Of course the Braves get the best version of Chris Sale in years, but whatever. I just am a salty Mets fan. But anyway, yeah. Next, we move on to Kyle Bradish of the Orioles, who went 5 innings pitched, 1 earned run, 4 hits, 2 walks, and 9 strikeouts against the Nationals. In Bradish's second start off the IL, he dominated the Nationals, 9 strikeouts and 5 innings pitched, and he managed to work up to 90 pitches in this one. He looks to be all the way back, and if you were able to stash him on your IL, you should be heavily rewarded for doing so, because he looks pretty good.
So, I'm not going to say too much about these guys, because they're all just studs. I think Chris Sale, for sure, turning around is just hilarious. Bradish... I want to talk about Bradish a little bit because it still scares me about the fact that he is still technically pitching with a tear in his UCL.
Yeah, like, yep.
That's so scary. And it's one of those situations where, like, I don't know if you'd want to trade him because you just know the injury is coming, or you just keep him and accept the fact that you might lose him in July, you know? Like, do you just take 3 really decent months of Kyle Bradish? Or do you try to trade him to get something a little bit better? I don't know what the answer is because he looks really good. And the fact that he was able to work up to 90 pitches, that's huge. You know, this is obviously something like, you know, you just have to figure out how the pitcher is feeling, right? If they're like, hey, I feel fine, like my arm's not compromised in any way, then maybe you continue rolling with them. But man, there's just so much risk in rolling with Kyle Bradish on your team right now.
Yeah, that's a great point that you bring up because it's always scary when a guy is pitching through an injury that you already know of. Like, same thing with Tristan McKenzie right now. And last year it was Joe Musgrove. Remember, he had that like bicep issue and he, you know, sat out a little bit, came back and was pitching, and he was pitching good. But you kind of almost expected that he was going to get hurt even greater. So trading him off is not a bad idea. If you can get something good, and I'm not saying like sell for anything on Kyle Bradish because he can be very good for those 3 months and help you win. But if you can acquire someone that's more stable, like if you can get a, I don't know, Bryce Miller, someone like that, or probably not Logan Gilbert. He's been really good, but he had a bad start on Thursday. So
yeah,
maybe you can acquire him for Kyle Bradish. I don't know. I don't know what the limit is on what you could trade Bradish for, but if you can flip him for something that's stable and more encouraging, then I probably would do so because that's a great point you bring up that, you know, he could get hurt again. He's pitching through something, and that's not good usually.
Yeah, it's just a little scary. That's all.
Yeah, I'm with you.
All right, moving on to Thursday's game. There were only 7 games, so it's a little bit of slim pickings here. But I'm going to start off with Ryan Jeffers of course, my Minnesota Twins. 1-for-2 with 2 RBI, a homer, and a walk. If you look at year-to-date numbers so far, Jeffers is currently the 3rd best catcher in all of fantasy baseball. He's slashing .308, .389, .631. Part of this improvement is certainly a better eye at the plate, as he's dramatically decreased his strikeout rate. Looking at his PLV metrics confirms this, as he's above the 90th percentile in decision value and strike zone judgment. I personally, of course, would love for all of this to be sustainable, but he's outperforming his expected stats, so that's a little worrying. That being said, he is getting consistent at-bats as a catcher and a DH, and the Twins are putting him in a position to succeed. So if you're in a fortunate position where you could sell him in a one-catcher league and you have a decent backup, this might be the best time to sell high. That being said, of course, as a Twins fan, I'd personally ride the wave as long as I can. And then we're going to talk about Brenton Doyle of the Colorado Rockies, 2-for-4 with 2 runs, 3 RBI, and a homer. It seems a little unfair to applaud a guy for hitting the ball well at Coors, but you have to know not everyone hits a homer at Coors. In his sophomore season, Doyle has seen some improvement in his strikeout rate. That being said, it's a 5% decrease to 30%, so that's not very good. The main thing this year is actually his dramatic improvement in runs. While this isn't something that a hitter can always control, he does have an above-average batting average, so he's at least a 2-category guy in some leagues. However, as a Rocky, he still suffers at away games, as he has a .225 average when he's not in Denver. He's probably still worth some hitting streams in the right situation, but unfortunately, in my opinion, he's still not good enough to be an everyday hitter on a fantasy team.
Yeah, so these two guys are complete polar opposites to me, because Ryan Jeffers is someone that I think everyone should be trying to acquire. Now, the Baseball Savant page and the underlying metrics don't look too great. They're not bad, but they don't look incredible. Like, something's not popping off the page where you're like, oh my God, this guy is going to be amazing. But he is playing pretty much every single day. He's at the top of the Twins lineup, and he's performing. I mean, he is playing really, really well. He is, like you said, a top 3 catcher right now. And I think it could hold up. I mean, genuinely, I think this is something that can sustain, and he could at least be like a top, I don't know, 8 catcher for the whole season. And that's someone you want to acquire and have in your catcher slot, because the one thing about catchers are they're not reliable. That's why Adley Rutschman was the number 1 overall catcher in leagues. That's why JT Realmuto goes high in leagues. That's why William Contreras goes high in leagues, because they have everyday playing time for the most part. And they are good hitters. They're consistent, and they play well. And then everyone else, like Will Smith and Yainer Diaz, yes, they're the guy, and they're giving you consistent production. But then after that, it's just a landmine of people that are playing every other day or playing 5 or 4 days out of a full week and not being good some of those times. It just lacks so much consistency. And right now, Jeffers is giving you consistency. So I think that's very important from the catcher slot. I think that he's playing very well. And sure, it might come to a halt. It might stop. It might end. But right now, it looks legit. So from the eye test alone, I would be good with Ryan Jeffers. And then speaking of the eye test, don't take this home run seriously from Brenton Doyle. And I mean that with nothing but love in my heart, because yeah. Brenton Doyle, first of all, is just not a good fantasy asset in general. But besides that, I was watching this game because someone, not going to name who, and it's not named John, on this podcast streamed Keaton Wynn against the Rockies in Coors. So one of us, not named John, were vested in this start, and I watched the whole thing. And the first 3 innings, Keaton Wynn looked good. And then that 4th inning, he basically just threw the ball down the middle to 6 straight batters, and it resulted in like a triple, double, single, single, double homer. And that's not good. That is not good. Brenton Doyle's home run came off of a dead down the middle pitch. It was directly down the middle of the plate. Like any of us, I'm talking directly to you, listener, whoever's listening to this right now, you could have picked up a bat and hit a home run off of this pitch in Coors Field. So do not take this home run seriously, because it was the most dead straight down the middle pitch I have ever seen in baseball this season. So yeah, not good. But Brenton Doyle, hey, good game, and you do play in Coors. So if you are in the deepest of leagues, maybe he's a solution. But in those shallower leagues, don't even think twice about Brenton Doyle.
Yeah, I would say like he makes sense in like a weekly, deep, NL only 5 outfielder team.
Correct. I agree.
Which is like the most hyper-specific of situations. But
and let's be real, anybody listening to this podcast is probably not playing in those ultra-deep 15-team, 500-people rostered leagues. So,
yeah.
Don't worry about Brenton Doyle.
Yeah. All right, moving on to pitchers. Again, it's a little bit of a homer pick, but again, it's kind of slim pickings today. Pablo Lopez of the Twins got a win against Seattle, 6.1 innings with 4 hits, 1 run, no walks, and 10 strikeouts. Pablo has had a pretty uncharacteristic season for a guy you would expect to be a top 10 pitcher. His ERA right now is 4.3. However, the whip and strikeouts have still been solid, so he's not, you know, not contributing for your team. If you've been reading the roundup, though, you'll know that Nick does not love the fact that Pablo's fastball has been located pretty poorly this season, as it's just too much in the zone. He still has been dominating with it, despite the not ideal location. He just hasn't been getting the whips he usually gets on his secondaries. His swing strike rates on his sweeper, changeup, and his curveball have all dropped this season. However, in this start, he still had a bunch of fastballs in the zone, but he was finally getting whips with a changeup and his sweeper. That all adds up to his first double-digit strikeout game of the season, and now he currently sports a more respectable 3.89 ERA. Moving on, we're going to talk about Eric Fetty of the White Sox. 6 innings with 6 hits, 0 runs, 3 strikeouts. I honestly can't believe we're talking about Eric Fetty for the second week in a row, but here we are. 6 shutout innings against one of the best teams in the American League so far in the Cleveland Guardians makes you take notice. That being said, those 3 strikeouts probably tell you most of what you need to know about the start, which is that it was less about Fetty dominating and more about the Cleveland offense being the Cleveland offense, which means a lot of singles and not much else. However, a win is a win, and this game certainly helped your team's whip and ERA this week. He, of course, gets rewarded with the Nationals next Tuesday, so if you have him on your team, I'd keep him.
So, Pablo Lopez, it's great to see him rebound because he has had a pretty up and down season so far, to say the least. 10 strikeouts, incredible. You want to see that. No walks, I think, is the most important part as well.
Yes.
So, very helpful. And I think Pablo Lopez is in line to really turn the corner here and be a great pitcher. He took a little bit longer than Luis Castillo did, but I think both of these guys are going to stabilize and be incredible pitchers for you for the rest of the fantasy season. And then Eric Fetty, yeah, once again, another good start. He was horrible last time out, but the 2 starts before that were dominant. So I don't really know what to do with this guy. He strikes out 11 one week, and then he strikes out 3 against a meh team. Like, I don't know. I just don't know what to do with this guy. I think he's a glorified streamer. I don't think he's someone you want to keep in your rotation in 10 and 12 team leagues. But in those right matchups, I think he is definitely a good source of quality starts and good ratios and maybe some strikeouts, because shrug emoji, I don't know what his strikeouts are going to be. So, yeah, I don't know. But Pablo Lopez, very good. Eric Fetty, very mediocre.
Yeah, that's probably the best way to describe it.
Hey, I try my best. We're analysts over here, right? You got to give the people some analysis, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But that wraps up the player performances from this past week. And now we are going to recommend some streamers for next week. We're going to start with the pitchers. John, who do you got for the people?
All right, I got an interesting selection of guys. We're going to start with Cooper Criswell of the Red Sox. He is 10% rostered on Yahoo, 0% on ESPN, which I don't believe, but that's what Fantasy Pro says, so that's what I believe. Criswell has the makings of a Toby, but against the Rays this upcoming Thursday, that's good enough for a win. His sinker and his sweeper are great at getting called strikes, while his changeup is basically used to induce poor contact. He also is stretched out to at least 80 pitches on the season, so as long as he can hold out for 5 innings, this might end up being a half-decent start. Next, Reese Olson of the Tigers, 25% rostered on Yahoo, 7% on ESPN. Olson is currently 42nd among qualified pitchers in ERA and 62nd in WHIP. All this despite a league average strikeout rate, and honestly, not great stuff. That being said, he's had 3 quality starts this year, and he's also had 2 games with 8 strikeouts, and now gets to face a Marlins team, like we mentioned, that just traded away their best batter. So, yeah, this probably should work out just fine. Olsen has good games and bad games. Ironically, a lot of his good games come against the Twins, which I'm kind of annoyed by, but this is an opportunity for him to show out. And then finally, Mason Black of the San Francisco Giants, 3% on Yahoo, 1% on ESPN. This really all depends on his Saturday start against the Reds. There are some things to like in Black's debut, especially his sweeper. However, he still got tagged for 5 runs, but he was facing Philly, which is kind of a juggernaut of an offense, so kind of expected that he didn't do so well. He's scheduled to face the Rockies at home on Friday, so assuming that this start against Cincy goes well, He'll likely stay for at least one more start after that, as Blake Snell is still working his way back from a strained groin. He is scheduled to go on a rehab assignment next week, I believe, but that doesn't necessarily mean that Mason Black is going to be out of the rotation by the time that Blake Snell is ready to come back.
So I like all of these recommendations, my favorite being Rhys Olson. I think he's pretty rosterable. I know you said he's 42nd among qualified pitchers in ERA and 62nd in whip. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that includes relievers as well, because
I believe it's starters. It's just starters.
Okay, because his ERA is like mid twos, and that's really good. So I thought it would be higher than 42nd, but that's just me being a bad guess, right? But I like Rhys Olson a lot. And against the Marlins, who are a really bad team without Luis Arraez, I'm all in on Olson. I like that a lot, which probably means he's going to get shelled because I like him so much. But I like Rhys Olson a lot. So I definitely think that you should get him for this Marlins start and maybe hold him, because he's been pretty good all year. And I think he's pitching a little bit above his head, and it's going to come back down to earth a little bit. But he's been very good, so ride it while it's hot. And then I'm going to go with Mason Black. I like what he did with his sweeper, but the Phillies, like you said, are an absolute juggernaut right now, one of the hottest offenses in Major League Baseball, so you can't really fault him for that. And if he stays in the rotation and he pitches against the Rockies in San Francisco, then I like that stream a lot. And then Cooper Criswell as well. You know, I like his matchup. I think he's got some good stuff, so maybe he'll be stretched out enough to get you a win, maybe a quality start, probably not, but yeah, we'll see on that. So I would rank them Olson, Black, and Criswell. Now, I see we have one batter stream that you want to recommend. John, who is that player?
Yeah, this probably is another homer pick, but I don't care. Max Kepler of the Twins, 34% on Yahoo, 14% on ESPN. Why? He is 90th percentile or better in average OBP and slugging right now. He's not a huge homer threat. He only has two on the season, I believe. But he's dramatically cut down his strikeout rate, and since coming back from the IL a little less than 3 weeks ago, he's put together 9 runs, 12 RBI, and has a slash line of 429, 491, 714 in 57 plate appearances. So going back to that original question of, do you like Nick Castellanos or Colton Cowser? I kind of like Max Kepler better than Castellanos right now. Of course, that's incredibly small sample size, because if you extrapolated this production in 15 games over an entire season, that's 100 runs and 100 RBI. And as much as I love Max Kepler, I don't think he's going to get there. So, this has coincided with a hot streak for the Twins as a whole. So maybe it's just kind of good vibes for the team and everyone's just really enjoying the game together. And that's why the offense is doing well. But you know, honestly, if you're looking for a short-term boost, Max Kepler might be a good option for your fantasy teams.
Hey, I don't blame you for recommending Kepler. He always does this. He always goes on a stretch where he looks great and he's incredible. And we're like, yes, he's finally doing the thing. And then he doesn't do the thing anymore. And you're like, crap, he stopped doing the thing. What do we do? So, yeah, it's definitely hard with Kepler. But right now, he's been on fire. The Twins have been on fire. So you got to ride things while they're hot. In fantasy, I always preach that. Ride the hot hand. Cut the slow hands and then alter them out. You know, you can always pick someone back up. Sure, you might have to pay a little bit, but if you can ride the hot hand, if your pickups are free, if you got a fab budget where you can throw out $0 bids and stuff, it's not bad to gamble on guys that you know are producing well. 90th percentile in average OBP slugging, those are all really good predictors of what he's doing. So I am not going to fault you for picking up Kepler. I definitely think it's a good bat suggestion. And then before we go, I wanted to just give a quick shout out because we didn't mention him at all. But Aaron Judge has really heated up over the last 6 days. He's at 3 home runs, scored 7 runs, 7 RBI, and stole a base in that 6-game stretch. So it looks like he's coming back to life. I know he was going through a really, really rough spat there. So it's nice to see one of the first round picks that most people gambled on really performing and coming back to life. So I just wanted to give him a quick shout out and make sure we didn't just avoid him completely. But that wraps up this episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. Before you all go, make sure you follow us on Twitter at ThisWeekPL and send us your comments and questions to our email at ThisWeekPLpod@gmail.com. You can find John on Twitter at TheJohnKeh. That's THEJOHNKE. And you can follow myself on Twitter at Regicidal, that's REGICIDAL. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to the Pitcherlist podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to your podcasts on. And please, once again, leave us a 5-star review if you enjoy listening to the show. It really helps out our ratings and helps people find the podcast. Lastly, sign up for Pitcherlist Plus. By doing so, you can join us in the Pitcherlist Discord and get advice from all of the fantasy experts and writers over there. But that's all for this week. We will be back next week with another episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. For John, I'm Lee, and we'll see you in the next one. Later, everyone.
Get out the chat room and clean my
Glad Stretch. Feeling fine, so fresh.
The Glad Girl Group coming at you with a throwback jam. That was Glad Force Flex Drawstring Trash Bags featuring Pine Sol Original Scent. And that's better than all good. It's all Glad.
Cheers to a great day and this ice-cold Corona.
You know what would make this day even better? My grandma's carne asada.
Or your grandma here with us, making carne asada.
She does love a cold Corona.
Throw in some dancing.
Oh, we can watch the game.
I'll drink to that.
So a backyard concert with football, food, dancing, and Corona?
And your grandma.
Or we could keep it simple.
Simple is good. Want a Corona?
Thanks. Salud to the perfect day.
Corona, la vida más fina. Get your Corona at ordercorona.com. Relax responsibly. Corona Extra Beer, imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.